The Kinship of Catholics and Jews is a program sponsored by the Institute of Judeo-Christian Studies, Seton Hall University. I'm Father Lawrence Frizzell. I'm the director of the Institute and moderator of this program. With me today is Dr. Dermot Quinn, who is a professor in the history department here at Seton Hall University. And Dr. Quinn has another position in the Chesterton Institute. And he's the editor, among other things, for the Institute of the G.K. Chesterton Review. And so, Dr. Quinn, tell us a little bit about your hero, Gilbert Keith Chesterton, and then we'll focus on a recent conference in which you've been involved.
Well, first of all, Father, thank you once again for inviting me to be on the program. It's always a pleasure and a delight to chat with you and with your listeners. You're right that I'm the editor of the Chesterton Review. In that respect, I'm following in very distinguished footsteps. Father Ian Boyd is the founder of the Chesterton Review, and for many years, for over 40 years, he was the editor of the Chesterton Review. And Father Boyd is now retired and is living in Canada. The Chesterton Review is based here at Seton Hall, and it is published by the Chesterton Institute. And Chesterton, I think, is a remarkable man. He was an Englishman, a convert to the church. A man who was prodigiously gifted in all sorts of literary ways, but he was a playwright. He was a journalist, of course, primarily a journalist, a novelist, a poet, the author of a number of biographies of, for example, St. Francis of Assisi, St. Thomas Aquinas. And I suppose from our point of view, he's most significant as a kind of defender of Christian orthodoxy. I mean, he himself is a sort of a convert, not simply to the Catholic Church, but to Christian orthodoxy as a way of understanding the world. And in his great book, Orthodoxy, published in 1908, he gave an account of his, so to speak, discovery of Christian orthodoxy. So I think he has an enormous appeal to many people because of his defense of Christian orthodoxy, because of the accessibility of his writings, because of his wit, because of his humor, because of his own ebullient personality. He's a wonderfully attractive spokesman, if you like, for Christian orthodoxy. And many people have been drawn to orthodoxy and drawn to the church because of the writings and the personality of Chesterton.
Now, recently, in March 2021, there was a Zoom conference here at Seton Hall, which focused on the work of Father Stanley Yackey, who was professor in the physics department here at Seton Hall for many years, and his use of the work of Gilbert Keith Chesterton for the integration of our human understanding of how people approach the sciences, the physical sciences and other disciplines in relation to the more profound realities of the eternal order. And Father Yackey was a Benedictine originally from Hungary. He was studying in Rome at the time when communism took over in Hungary, and he did not return to his own country, but came to Benedictine monasteries here in the United States after he had completed his theological studies. I think his book was published in 1953, New Tendencies in Ecclesiology was the title in French. Now, Father Yackey drew an enormous audience, we could say, in different parts of the world, because of his work. And tell us a little bit about the relation between Father Yaki and Gilbert Keith Chesterton, please.
Well, Father, you've given a very lovely account, a brief biography of Father Yaki, and you're certainly right that in March of this year, a conference took place here at Seton Hall, but of course, by being on Zoom, it was accessible to anybody in the world. And that conference was devoted to Father Yaki and his contribution to the philosophy of science. I think I would say this about Father Yaki. What you say is certainly correct. He was a remarkable man, a remarkable priest. He was, I think in some ways, you could say one of the most important priests of the 20th century. I mean, precisely because of his work in the philosophy of science, and indeed as a scientist. I mean, he wasn't simply a philosopher of science. He was a scientist. He was a physicist. As you say, born in Hungary and ordained to the priesthood in Hungary, but then coming to the United States and ultimately coming to Seton Hall. He, as you sort of indicate, came to America after the war. He was ordained in 1948. I think he came to the States in 1950 and taught in various Benedictine establishments in Pennsylvania. I see Father Yaki as someone who has thought very deeply about questions of science, about the, so to speak, epistemological foundations of science. I mean, what is it that we can genuinely know about the world, and what is it that we claim to know when we are doing science? And those questions are questions of profound importance, because, of course, there is this view articulated by many scientists that the scientific account of the world is the only account of the world, that the universe is capable of material explanation without any reference to a creator. And that view, which is not, by the way, of course, held by every scientist, of course, but that view has become kind of almost the dominant view in our culture, that there is no need for reference to a creator to explain the material reality of the cosmos, of the universe. And that deeply distressed Father Yaki at all sorts of levels. I mean, clearly it distressed him as a believing Christian, but it also distressed him as a scientist, because it seemed to him that this was really not terribly good science, apart from not terribly good philosophy or theology. So he was at the center of this conversation, which is such a central conversation, of the relationship between science and theology. And he made very significant contributions, I think, to that conversation. And he drew on the ideas of a number of people. And one of those people was Chesterton. He had a great admiration for Chesterton. And indeed wrote a book about Chesterton, published in 1986, called Chesterton, A Seer of Science. He saw Chesterton as someone who, in a kind of remarkably brilliant way, brought together some of the ideas of essentially St. Thomas Aquinas about the nature of reality and about the nature of our possible knowledge of reality. In bringing those ideas together, Chesterton, according to Father Yaki, was a sort of seer of science. And that, I think, is that was the basis, if you like, of our conversation in the conference.
Now, I remember Father Yaki telling me one time that, and I think other people had heard this, when he was here at Seton Hall, that at one point when he was teaching in St. Vincent's Arch Abbey in La Trobe, Pennsylvania, he lost his voice. And not being able to speak, he decided to go into a doctoral program in physics, which he did at Fordham University. And so that was the foundation for his move from the teaching of theology as such, where he had already a profound foundation. He was able then to begin this study of physics, and especially of cosmology, the great questions concerning the universe that certainly focused his attention for many decades and many of his books. And so you were discussing in your paper at this conference on March the 10th, the links between Father Yaki's work and the insights that Chesterton had offered in his many publications. So here's Father Yaki, unable to speak, and he's invited to come to Seton Hall as professor in physics. I remember hearing him one time say how he really appreciated the trust that Seton Hall had to invite him when he was still unable to articulate his thought verbally in the classroom and so on, that we would have him here at Seton Hall as a professor and indeed as distinguished professor in physics. So I think Father Yaki had a great appreciation for Seton Hall. He was here from 1965 until his death. He, of course, lived in Princeton. I once asked him why he preferred Princeton. He could live closer by to Seton Hall. In those days, we had card catalogs in the library. Uh-huh. So he said the reason he's living in Princeton, the card catalog at Seton Hall University has a certain number of boxes, a certain number of shelves. He said, the entire card catalog here at Seton Hall is the equivalent of what would be in Princeton University Library, the letter A. And so he was wanting to have a place where he could have more direct access to
wonderful.
A great
That's
number
wonderful.
Of sources.
Yeah.
Now, fortunately, nowadays, we're privileged to have so many things on the internet. And Father Yaki's search for the literature that he needed to study would be, in some areas, certainly much easier. Now, Dr. Quinn, you have offered your presentation, which I'd like you to elaborate upon us for our benefit, with regard to a certain number of issues that Father Yaki found very much grounded in the presentation that Chesterton made in his many writings. The fact that our world is complex and multifaceted, that Father Yaki was convinced that the ultimate explanation of the world had to be reached through several disciplines, each of which has its strengths and each has its limits. So as you develop your study on Chesterton and Father Yaki on this question of science, could you just give us a brief approach to how Gilbert Keith Chesterton's work provided that stimulus for?
Certainly can, Father. I think in a way, what we have to do is go back a little in time to look at Chesterton's own sort of intellectual maturation or intellectual development. And he wrote, as I say, a kind of a famous book, one of the great books, I think, of apologetics of the 20th century called Orthodoxy. And in Orthodoxy, there's a chapter called The Ethics of Elfland. And it's a kind of a rather curious title. But what Chesterton tries to do in this book, or this chapter called The Ethics of Elfland, is describe his kind of apprehension of the world, his sense of the kind of the strangeness of the world, you might almost say. I mean, this is a kind of a childlike view or a childish view of the world, that we enter the world not knowing the world, that it's a kind of a wonderful place. And we're trying to, so to speak, get our heads around the mystery of the world. And in this Ethics of Elfland chapter of Chesterton's book Orthodoxy, he gives voice to this sense of the kind of strange marvelousness of the world. And Father Yackey was very taken with this. And let me just, if I may just read you a couple of lines from this Ethics of Elfland chapter in Orthodoxy. And here's what Chesterton says. He says, there are certain sequences or developments, cases of one thing following another, which are true, which are in the true sense of the word reasonable. They are, in the true sense of the word, necessary. Such are mathematical and merely logical sequences. If the ugly sisters are older than Cinderella, it is, in an iron and awful sense, necessary that Cinderella is younger than the ugly sisters. I mean, this is Chesterton giving a very sort of homely example of necessary truths. I mean, if A is older than B, then B must necessarily be younger than A. I mean, this is a necessary truth. And Chesterton gives it in a very kind of homely sort of way. But, and here he continues in this chapter, but as I began to take notice of the natural world, I observed an extraordinary thing. I observed that learned men in spectacles talked as if the trees bear fruit were just as necessary as the fact that two and two trees make three. But it is not. All the terms used in the science books, law, necessity, order, tendency, are really unintellectual because they assume an inner synthesis which we do not possess. So what Chesterton is doing there, Father, is making a distinction between kinds of knowledge, what you might call things that are necessarily true, and other things which are certainly true, but they're not necessarily true. They're not true by necessity. And we know those second, that we grasp that second species of knowledge empirically. We go out and we look and we test and we check. And Chesterton says we should never, as it were, confuse necessary truths, which are the truths of relations of ideas. One plus one necessarily equals two, if we understand what we mean by the word one, if we understand what we mean by plus, and if we understand what we mean by equals, then it has to be true. It's a mathematically necessary truth. But Chesterton says, no, other things are certainly true, but they're not necessarily true in the same sense. And that distinction between types of knowledge was very much the kind of approach to knowledge that we see in, for example, someone like David Hume, the 18th century Scottish philosopher. Hume made exactly that distinction between what he called relations of ideas and matters of fact. So Chesterton, and this is kind of one of the little ironies of the presentation that I gave at the conference, Chesterton defends Christian orthodoxy, or he begins his defense of Christian orthodoxy by drawing on some of the epistemological distinctions of a kind of notorious atheist, David Hume. Now, what was Hume trying to do? Hume was essentially trying to undermine the claims of metaphysics. I mean, Hume was an atheist, and he was saying that the claims of metaphysics are simply not to be taken seriously because they are confusing things that are knowable by experience and things that are necessarily true, are true by necessity. Hume was assaulting some of the kind of intellectual claims of metaphysics, saying essentially metaphysics should be scrapped, should be it's sophistry and illusion, and should be thrown into the flames. And Chesterton said, "Well, I'm not so sure about that. Let's not go quite so quickly." And in his Ethics of Elfland chapter in Orthodoxy, he said, "Well, essentially, what I see is a kind of extraordinary world." I mean, if I could quote Chesterton again, he said, "In the science of mental relations," that's what Hume called, you know, relations of ideas. In the science of mental relations, there really are laws. There really are laws. I mean, it is a law of logic that it has to be true if you believe these certain things. But then he goes on to say, Chesterton, in the realm of physical fact, there are no laws, only, as he puts it, weird repetitions. Weird repetitions. He says, what I see in the world around me are these kind of weird repetitions. Yeah, I mean, the sun does rise every morning, and it's a pretty good thing that it rises every morning, but it doesn't have to rise. It's a kind of wonderfully weird repetition. So Chesterton says, I see the created, or I see the world around me, and I see things that are but don't have to be. It doesn't have to be. There doesn't have to be a world. The entire world is contingent. That is a thing that he says should be celebrated, because the contingency of the world is the result of a moment of creation. It is the result of a creator, not necessarily a moment of creation, but it is the result of a creator. That's really the kind of approach to kind of reality that greatly attracted Father Yackey, who saw, yes, of course, that we have a world of, as Chesterton would put it, weird repetitions, and we rely on those weird repetitions, but we cannot claim with logical completeness that the world has to be. It doesn't have to be. There are no, so to speak, laws of physics. There are these kind of miraculous, wonderful, weird repetitions for which we should be grateful. So that's essentially what Chesterton was doing, and what Father Yackey thought was so valuable in Chesterton. So to speak, recognizing that what we call laws can't actually logically be called laws, because laws assume a sort of necessity in the physical world. And as Hume pointed out, there is no such logical necessity. It's all, it seems, kind of weirdly repetitious.
And so postulating that nothing is necessary, we are going to be challenged either to have a vision, an insight that there is a creator who has put everything into a certain order, or the alternative is to say that everything sort of happened automatically.
That's right.
Without any sense of its origin. And it's quite incredible, of course, for those of us who approach life with this sense of God as central. It's a rather dismal alternative, we can say. with that. Now, one of the interesting things about Chesterton's work was the idea of everything has limits. So maybe as we wrap it up in our discussion today, if you could recall for us some of the points that Chesterton makes about this, both the strengths of the sciences and so on, but also the limitation of each discipline.
Well, Chesterton did indeed, as you say, Father, kind of celebrate limits. He didn't think that a limit was a kind of intellectual constraint or constriction. It was the way in which we can apprehend reality. I mean, for example, he said, you know, that I mean, the greatest thing about a picture is the frame, which you may strike as being a little perverse. But nonetheless, he says, we can only be free within constraints. You know, you can only compose great music or any kind of music if there are, you know, kind of chords and scales and rules. I mean, it is within rules that we run riot. It's within rules that we have freedom. So that, for example, as I sometimes say, the rules of chess are the game of chess. I mean, you can't play chess. You can't enjoy chess unless you accept that the rules are what they are. I mean, the pawn moves in a particular direction. The queen moves in a particular direction. And that is what constitutes the game of chess. So Chesterton said that freedom is only possible within constraints. You can only write the greatest possible sonnet if you write 14 lines. And he kind of developed that idea, as a way of kind of understanding reality itself. I mean, we understand the world, as he says, as a kind of a story. And a story, as he put it, it's an earthly story with a heavenly meaning. Well, when we think of a story, what is a story but something with a beginning, a middle, and an end? I mean, it has a kind of form, it has a sort of structure, all reality is, so to speak, graspable if we understand the rules of form. We get this, of course, from Aristotle, who has wrote so powerful and eloquently about form and formal causation and so on. Chesterton wants us to understand that freedom is possible only within limits, and to have a limitless world is, in a sense, a world of not freedom but slavery. So going back to your point a few moments ago about those who would explain the deepest reality without reference to a creator, what do they do essentially? Well, we have this notion of a sort of endlessly repeating a cosmos, a kind of a cyclical reality, which is deeply, deeply necessitarian. And we have no control over it. And Chesterton says, well, is this freedom? And the answer is no. So essentially what Chesterton says is that we participate in the reality of God, and we participate as sub-creators in the created order. And that participation is a form of freedom. And out of that participation, we have the glories of science.
Good. Well, Dr. Quinn, I appreciate very much your introducing us to the work of Father Yaki and of Gilbert Keith Chesterton. We can draw many other implications from the points of discussion, but I really thank you for drawing our attention to some of these fundamentals, which will be provocative for further thinking. So I am grateful for your presence with me today, Dr. Quinn.
Thank you.
Our listeners to be with us again next Sunday at 11 a.m. for the Kinship of Catholics and Jews.